Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 8, Manifestation of Brahma from Vishnu, text number 2. Soham ninam,
kushula sukhaya dukham.
Mahatkatanam viramaya tasya.
Pravartaye Bhagavatam Puranam.
Yad aha sakshat Bhagavan Rishibhya.
Aham.
Aham.
I. Dinam. Of the human being. Kushula.
Kushula.
Very little.
Very little.
Sukhaya.
Sukhaya.
For happiness.
For happiness.
Dukham.
Dukham.
Distress.
Distress.
Mahat.
Mahat.
Great.
Great.
Kathanam.
Kathanam.
Entered into.
Entered into.
Viramaya.
Viramaya.
For mitigation.
For mitigation.
Tasya.
Tasya.
His.
His.
Pravartaye.
In beginning.
Bhagavatam.
Bhagavatam.
Srimad Bhagavatam.
Bhagavatam.
Puranam.
Puranam.
Vedic supplement.
Vedic supplement.
Yat.
Yes.
Which.
Which.
Aha.
Aha.
Sorry. Aha.
Aha.
Said.
Said.
Sakshat.
Sakshat.
Directly.
Directly.
Bhagavan.
Bhagavan.
The personality of Godhead.
Personality of Godhead.
Rishi. Sorry. Rishibhya.
Rishibhya.
Unto the sages.
Unto the sages.
Translation. Let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavad Purana, which was directly spoken to the great sages by the personality of Godhead, for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries, for the sake of very little pleasure. Translation responsibly. Let me now begin speaking on the Bhagavad Purana, which was directly spoken to the great sages, by the personality of Godhead,
for the benefit of those
who are entangled in extreme miseries,
for the sake of very little pleasure,
purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. The sage Maitreya proposed to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam because it was especially compiled and traditionally comes down in the disciplic succession for the solution of all the problems of human society. Only one who is fortunate can have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees of the Lord. Under the spell of material energy, the living entities are entrapped in the bondage of many difficulties simply for the sake of a little bit of material happiness. They engage in fruitive activities, not knowing the implications. Under the false impression that the body is the self, the living entities foolishly relate to so many false attachments. They think that they can engage with materialistic paraphernalia forever. This gross misconception of life is so strong that a person suffers continually, life after life, under the external energy of the Lord. If one comes in contact with the book Bhagavatam, as well as the devotee Bhagavat, who knows what the Bhagavatam is, then such a fortunate man gets out of the material entanglement. Therefore, Sri Maitreya Muni, out of compassion for the suffering men in the world, proposes to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam first and last.
Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurunmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
So here Maitreya Muni is telling Vidura that he will begin speaking on the Bhagavad Purana or the Srimad Bhagavatam, so which was spoken by the Supreme Lord to the sages for the benefit of conditioned living entities who are struggling so hard for a little bit of pleasure. So this point is a very, this verse is very, very relevant to Kali Yuga, because in Kali Yuga, people are striving for happiness which is very tiny, but in order to get that tiny happiness, they have to undergo so much distress. So this verse is so relevant to us. So how living entities are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. Isn't that true? So before we get there, here we see that Maitreya Muni, he is about to embark on the Bhagavad Purana. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is spoken by the Supreme Lord. Here it says to the great sages. So in the coming verses we will hear that the four Kumaras, they approached Lord Sankarshan. And Lord Sankarshan, he spoke to them the Srimad Bhagavatam. So here that's what's being referred to, when the Supreme Lord spoke directly to the sages. Because we know this Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken to Lord Brahma in the form of the Chaturshloki in his heart. Then Brahma gave it to his disciple. Who's Brahma's disciple? Narada, yes. And then Narada Muni instructed Vyasadeva to compile the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Vyasadeva had compiled the Vedas. So he said, you compile the Srimad Bhagavatam as well. And then Vyasadeva spoke it to his son, Shukdev Goswami. And like that, it's coming down in disciplic succession. But here, when it is said that was directly spoken to the great sages, that refers to the Kumaras who approached Lord Sankarshan, which we will hear in the next few days. And then Prabhupada says that Srimad Bhagavatam traditionally comes down in the disciplic succession for the solution of all the problems of human society. So this point is being made here. So yes, Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for, it is meant for the conditioned souls who are suffering in this world. So we see in this world there's no end to the problems. There are so many problems. And our governments and different leaders, political leaders or social leaders, they're trying to solve these problems. But Srimad Bhagavatam has a solution for these problems. We see that the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto it is said that the Srimad Bhagavatam is for the Nirmat Saranam, you know, Satam. That the Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the pure devotees who are pure, who are free from envy. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, only the pure devotees can understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. And one of the qualifications of a pure devotee is that they have to be free from envy. So in the material world, there is so much envy, and competition is based on envy, as Prabhupada mentions. So those who are afflicted by envy, and those who are not devotees, they cannot understand the Srimad Bhagavatam. They cannot even understand the Bhagavad Gita, what to speak of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Krishna, he says in the Bhagavad Gita, what's that verse? Bhaktosi me sakha cheti rahasyam hi etat uttamam. How does it start? Sorry? Prokta puradhana. So Krishna says that I'm speaking this knowledge to you because you are my devotee and you are my friend. And the qualification to understand Krishna consciousness is that one has to be engaged in the process of bhakti. Of Krishna consciousness. One has to be engaged in the process. So only a devotee can understand the Supreme Lord. So if we cannot even understand Bhagavad Gita without being a devotee of Krishna, then what to speak of the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is the Amalam Puranam. You know, the Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that this is the spotless Purana. So Srimad Bhagavatam is, there are 18 Puranas, and Srimad Bhagavatam is classified as one of the Puranas in the 18. So there's Puranas in the classified mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance. So though Srimad Bhagavatam is placed in the category of the goodness Puranas, but it is transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam is beyond the modes of nature, because Srimad Bhagavatam is the Supreme Lord Himself. So there is no difference between the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Supreme Lord. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a literary incarnation of the Lord, and it is the Lord Himself. So therefore, it is Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental to the three modes of nature. So we see in the Vedas, most of the Vedas, they deal with the karma kanda, or the fruitive activities. They deal with the three modes of nature. Traigunya Vishaya Veda, Nishtraigunya Bhavarjuna. So they deal with the three modes of nature to the purpose to gradually uplift the conditioned living entity. But Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental. Srimad Bhagavatam is Rasa Shastra. So we see people engaged in activities, they do it because they get some rasa out of it. Anyone who is doing any activity, they perform any activity, is to get some pleasure. Some taste is there, some rasa is there. Whether someone is going to work, or having a family, or playing sports, or jumping from a plane, or having an argument. Sometimes people are having an argument just for the sake of it, because they're getting pleasure out of it. And as Urmila Mataji was mentioning, when people are going in the stadium, they're so angry, their team is losing, they're getting some rasa out of it by shouting and beating the other guys. So there is rasa involved. So Srimad Bhagavatam is a rasa shastra. But the problem with mundane rasas is that mundane rasas are temporary. Yehi samsparsha ja bhoga dukha yunaya evate adi anta vanta dukhantaya nateshu ramate buddha. So intelligent persons do not partake in the sources of misery which arise from contact of the senses with the sense objects. In other words, the Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental. And the rasa in this, when one reads Srimad Bhagavatam, we come in contact with the Supreme Lord directly. And then, by coming in touch with the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can derive newer and newer pleasures. In fact, one does not get bored of it. One does not get bored of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. This Bhagavatam class has been going on in this temple for the last, since 1974 or 75, whenever the temple was opened. Since then, Srimad Bhagavatam class has been going on, and this might be the third or fourth time the Bhagavatam is being recited. So that's the proof. It's still going on. We don't read a newspaper for 30 years. The same edition, We don't read the Sunday Age, the magazine which comes in that, for 30 years. It's, people will go nuts. But Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, they are being recited all over the world in so many different places, in so many congregations. The Srimad Bhagavatam is being recited. And Srila Prabhupada, he instituted this Srimad Bhagavatam as part of the morning program. So Prabhupada's program was the ISKCON sandwich, which is now, these days it's an open-ended, one-ended sandwich. So which was morning Bhagavatam, then evening Bhagavad Gita class. So in that way, we are in touch with the Rasa Shastras. And Srimad Bhagavatam is also a Kripa Shastra. It's a mercy Shastra, because the Srimad Bhagavatam is not only meant for the Paramahamsas, But it is also, as it is pointed out here, it is also meant for those who are, for the conditioned souls, for those who are suffering in this world. But they can only understand through the help of a devotee. Because they are not devotees, then they cannot understand themselves, they cannot understand directly Srimad Bhagavatam. They can only understand through the association of pure devotees, as Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport. That one is very fortunate if they have the opportunity to hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of pure devotees of the Lord. So we all are extremely fortunate that we have this opportunity to be able to hear the Bhagavatam in an assembly like this. Because we all are, in one sense, we are pure devotees because we are engaged in the process of sadhana bhakti. So we are like an unripe mango. So when one achieves pure love for Krishna, then we are a ripe mango. Then that's pure bhakti. But even if devotees are engaged in sadhana bhakti in the beginning processes, we are considered a pure devotee in the sense that we have embarked on the process and we accept that Krishna is the goal. Krishna is the supreme goal. If we accept that, then we are pure devotees in that sense. And we are like an unripe mango, which in due course will become ripe by following the rules and regulations under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master. So yes, Srimad Bhagavatam is meant for the pure devotees, but even those who are not pure, those who are in this world, it is for them as well. And we can see Srila Prabhupada, he said even distribute Srimad Bhagavatam on the street. Srila Prabhupada instructed he said you can distribute the first canto on the street, 1.1, 1.2, He authorized certain books to be distributed. So these books are going out to the masses, you know, people who have no idea of Krishna consciousness. They have no idea of spiritual life. To them, we are giving them the Amala Puranam. We are giving them the spotless Purana. Sometimes even they don't have Bhagavad Gita, but we give them a Srimad Bhagavatam. So we can see that the fact is, it is meant for the conditioned souls as well, because Srimad Bhagavatam can purify them. But the important point is they are getting the association of Prabhupada, and as it is mentioned here, one can come out of the suffering of material life through the association of the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. So not only are we giving them the book Bhagavat, the Srimad Bhagavatam is as I said before, because it is the Supreme Lord, so this is the book Bhagavat. And the person who is following the instructions of the Srimad Bhagavatam, they are the person Bhagavat. So there's the person Bhagavatam and there's the book Bhagavatam. So we have to serve both. We can only understand the book Bhagavat from the person Bhagavat. So when we are giving people Srila Prabhupada's books, we are even giving them the person Bhagavat. Because Srila Prabhupada is in his purports. Prabhupada said that, I'm never, just because Prabhupada has left the planet, he said that I'm never gone, you know, I'm there in my purports. If you want to understand me, then read the Bhaktivedanta purports. And when we read the Bhaktivedanta purports, we can understand Srila Prabhupada and even Krishna through the medium of his devotees. So when we are giving people these books, We are giving them association with the pure devotee, Srila Prabhupada. And through Srila Prabhupada's purports, through the Bhaktivedanta purports, they can understand the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, and the Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, there's no hope. Otherwise, there's no scope for them to understand. If we just give them the translations, people can't understand because they have their own misconceptions and they will apply that to the translation as well. It's like I met one person yesterday at Urban Yoga, and she was telling me that She read Bhagavad Gita and she went to India, Rishikesh, and she got initiated from a guru. A guru is an Ayurvedic doctor as well as a spiritual master. And then she has a blog and she's writing on that blog. So I said, okay, give me your address of your blog. I would like to read it. So last night I went on the blog. And there it said, I've read Bhagavad Gita and the conclusion I've come to, I've understood that I am God. This is after reading the Bhagavad Gita. You know, not a bona fide version of the Bhagavad Gita. I've come to the conclusion, I am God, you can become God, we all are God. And at this time I've just forgotten, but now, I had forgotten, but now I've remembered I'm God. And we all are one. So my guru has made me self-realized. So this is a misunderstanding, because of, if we just read the translation, there are so many editions of Bhagavad Gita out there with translations. And usually the translations are also wrong. And people, because of their own misconceptions and because of a poor fund of knowledge, they come to the wrong conclusion. But with Srila Prabhupada's purports, there's not much room for there's not much room to move around. Srila Prabhupada just gives it straight. Prabhupada doesn't beat around the bush. He just says straight away, you know, this is it. And this is in every purport to every verse, Srila Prabhupada gives the conclusion that we are servants of Krishna. And we are meant to be engaged in devotional service. So that is the benefit of the person Bhagavat. The person Bhagavat can explain the book Bhagavat. So Srila Prabhupada, he put a great deal of emphasis on giving this literature to people of this world, because then they get his association, and through his association they can understand the Supreme Lord. So charity begins at home. Before we give these books out to others, we need to have them ourselves. How many of you have the set of Srimad Bhagavatam at home? A full set, the big one. Oh, very nice. Most of you have it. That's very good. So for those who don't have it, you need to get a full set of Prabhupada's books. And Radha Sangha is pointing. You can see her upstairs at the shop. Or you can see Jainatai. So there is competition here between the temple shop and the book shed. So whoever offers the best price, they get the deal. She might beat you. Okay, so you need to get a set of Prabhupada's books, and you can start with the Srimad Bhagavatam, because charity begins at home. So when we have the Srimad Bhagavatam at home, we have the Supreme Lord at home. So it is very important as devotees, we have the Supreme Lord in our home. And the Srimad Bhagavatam, because it is, as I was mentioning, it's non-different from the Supreme Lord. We see in some places that I've been to some centers where, you know, they don't have deities, but they have Srimad Bhagavatam on the altar, and they worship the Srimad Bhagavatam because it is Krishna. So they offer aarti, you know, full aarti to the Srimad Bhagavatam, and they sing kirtan for the pleasure of the Bhagavatam. So having Bhagavatam in our home is having the Supreme Lord directly. And as His Holiness Devamrita Swami was mentioning, it makes a very bold statement. Whoever comes in a home, they can see that this person is serious, you know. He's into something. Because the Srimad Bhagavatam and Srila Prabhupada's books, they take a lot of space on your bookshelf. And they look very attractive as well. If you know, I've gone to many people's home and seen, you know, like, mundane people and their bookshelves, And if you compare that to the Srimad Bhagavatam, because they all, you know, look the same and very nicely done, it looks very, very attractive. And when people come to your home, they can pick the book and read it. Like one person was telling me yesterday that she had the Bhagavad Gita. She got it from the Bhakti Yoga Club. And she went to one of the retreats. And then she got a Bhagavad Gita. She bought a Bhagavad Gita from us. And she didn't read it for, you know, 2-3 years. And now, because she likes to clean her home, and then she was cleaning, and one day the Bhagavad Gita fell on her. it fell on her, and then she picked it up, and then started reading it. And then she came to our program last night. There you go. So we can see that these books, people will read them. Maybe you'll read them first of all, hopefully. We hope you'll read them. And then someone who might come to your home might read them. Or they might borrow it, take it to their home, and then they might read it as well one day. So Srila Prabhupada's books are like time bombs. They can, if they're placed. In fact, Prabhupada wanted a full set of books in every person's home. That was Prabhupada's aim. Not, you know, what to speak of devotees' home. He wanted it in the home of non-devotees as well. A full set of Prabhupada's books. So that's why I'm saying, charity begins at home. If you don't have it, you need to have it. So myself and Jagannath Ram Prabhu, we are working on this. And we'll try to come up with some... in consultation with Aniruddha Prabhu, we'll try to come up with some packages which are attractive, and so if those who don't have, you can get them, and we can even have, you can, if you can't make a payment upfront, you can do it an installment in a monthly basis or weekly, something, some arrangement like that. So you can have these books at home and you can be benefited. So it's important we read these books. So as it is said here that Srimad Bhagavatam is for the benefit of those who are entangled in extreme miseries for the sake of very little pleasure. So this is a very interesting and important point here. So we see people in this world, they engage in so many activities to get some rasa or some pleasure. Isn't it? People are working so hard. But the amount of pleasure we get is very little in this world. The pleasure we get in this world is very small. But in order to get that, we have to work very hard. People have to go through so much misery to get a little bit of pleasure. And still, they can't see that. The amazing thing is, by the trick of Maya, they think they are enjoying. They can't see the distress. They only see the happiness they're getting, but they're unable to see the distress. And the reason for this is because they're influenced by the mode of passion. So what does Krishna say? Let's read the symptoms of the mode of passion. No, I'll open right there. Almost there. Yes, here. Krishna says, Rajo ragat makam vidhi trishna sanga samudbhavam tan nibad nati kaunteya karma sangena dehina. So Krishna says, the mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings. O son of Kunti, and because of this, the embodied living entity is bound to material fruitive actions. So it is born of unlimited desires and longings. Then there's another way nice. Loba pravritir arambha karma nam ashamas priha rajasi etani jayante vivridhe bharatarshava. O chief of the Bharatas, when there's an increase in the mode of passion, the symptoms of great attachment, fruitive activity, intense endeavor, and uncontrollable desire and hankering develop. So if we analyze modern society, this is what we see. This, people have uncontrollable desires. Even we might have them as well. You know, so many desires. They can't control the desires. They really want something. Then they want it. And they're hankering so much for something. And they have so many desires, not only one. And the result of that is then one becomes very attached to one's desires because of contemplation. One becomes very attached. And when one becomes very attached, then one engages in fruitive activity. That's the result. Then one has to work very hard, endeavor very hard in order to fulfill their material desires. And the happiness they're getting is only an imagination. It is, as Krishna mentioned in the second chapter, that material happiness is simply a mental concoction. You know, it is a concoction in the mind. If I do this, I'll be so happy. You know, for example, people think if I have a 100K package, 150, I'll be so happy when they see the money in their bank account. They get happiness, and that is a mental pleasure. It's a mental concoction. But what they don't see is to earn that package, they have to work so hard. The long hours, the stress at work, putting up with all kinds of people. You know, that's the other side, which they can't see. And the reason they can't see is because of the mode of passion. Because the mode of passion makes our vision very narrow. You know, it's like a horse. A horse has blinders on it. And the reason they put the blinders so it just looks straight, you know. So the mode of passion, it puts blinders to a vision. And in the mode of goodness, one develops knowledge, Krishna says. The symptom of the mode of goodness is, it leads to knowledge, illumination, in the 9 gates of the body. So in knowledge, one can see things as they are. In ignorance is complete delusion. Ignorance is the opposite of mode of goodness. So there's no knowledge at all. But in passion, there is fruitive activity, which means, in other words, what's in it for me? You know, that's passion. Kya milega mujhe? What will I get? Why should I do it? Why, if I do this, what will I get? So we see the impetus for so many people to go to work is if they don't get their paycheck, they won't go to work. So they're not going to work out of love for the master, you know. That's why we say love is only for Krishna. Because here we're not getting paid to do something. You know, for all of you are doing service, you're not getting paid. It is voluntary. So that's the proof. That the reason you're doing it is because you're doing it out of love for Krishna. But in the material world, people don't do something just, you know, like that. They want at the end of the day, they want the paycheck. Or they want appreciation at their workplace, recognition. And even if someone's engaging in charity, material charity, we see the motivation for that is usually there is some expectation of one is glorified, or there is appreciation shown. One is recognized. So that is a material motivation. And the result of the mode of passion is simply distress, as you know, Krishna points out further. He says, the result of pious action or mode of goodness is pure and is said to be in the mode of goodness, but action done in the mode of passion results in misery. So here we see the same thing is confirmed, that activities engaged in the mode of passion, they result in misery, not only misery, but extreme misery. As it is said here. Krishna here says misery, but here Maitreya Muni is saying extreme misery. But we cannot see that because we are under the influence of mode of passion. So someone under the influence of passion, they cannot see that. An action performed in the mode of ignorance results in foolishness. And Prabhupada gives the example of the skyscraper. He says that, of the mode of passion, he says, they want to build a skyscraper, but to build a skyscraper, there's so much effort involved. You know, so much, you know, financial. They have to, first of all, they have to get the money, and then there's so much toil involved. So they have to work so hard, you know, get the materials, build it, and then one gets some mental pleasure on living on the 50th story or 40th or whatever, or the 100th story. You know, that's a mental concoction, the pleasure of that view. But in order to do that, one has to engage in so much misery. So generally people get offended if you tell them this. Then Prabhupada says, this gross misconception of life is so strong that a person suffers continually, life after life, under the external energy of the Lord. So the mode of passion is pushing on the cycle of birth and death. The mode of passion is pushing on the wheel of samsara. Because when we want, because of fruitive activities, or what's in it for me mentality, then we have to get the reaction as well. If we identify with the work and the result of the work, and then we have to get the reaction as well. And in order to get the reaction, then all reactions cannot be gotten in one life, so you have to get in another life. And then in like this, the cycle is perpetuated. So this is the wheel of karma. But that is broken, as Srila Prabhupada is saying, by association with the book Bhagavat and the person Bhagavat. So that's why association with devotees is very important. To associate and hear from them, and to serve in their association. And therefore, Sri Maitreya Muni, out of compassion for the suffering men in the world, proposes to speak on the Srimad Bhagavatam first and last. So as I was saying, Srimad Bhagavatam is a Kripa Shastra, and Srila Prabhupada also, out of great compassion, he wrote his Bhaktivedanta purports for the deliverance of mankind. And what's that verse? That it is especially the duty of Indians to Bharat Bhumile Hoite Manushya Janmahar Para Upakar. So for those who have taken birth in the land of India, it is our prime responsibility to distribute this knowledge for the benefit of suffering humanity. Especially those who have taken birth in India. Because we have been gifted with this opportunity, you know. We have taken birth in the land of Dharma. India is the land of Dharma. So we are very fortunate in that sense. And we have access to all this material. Or at least people have, you know, some idea in India. And Krishna consciousness is just beneath the surface. You know, Prabhupada said, if you scratch the surface, you know, it's there, you know, people have it. So we are meant to distribute it not only within our Indian community, but to the wider world as well. You know, we are living in Melbourne, and Melbourne is one of the world's most diverse cities to be in terms of, you know, the people here. It's a very diverse city. It's a very good thing. It's very multicultural. So we are meant to give Krishna consciousness to everyone, just not within our own community. Prabhupada opened this temple for everyone. That was Prabhupada's vision. That was his mood. And he wants people of all races to be here and glorify the Supreme Lord, you know, in Sankirtan, in congregation. So we have that good fortune, and we are meant to give it to everyone. So we need to be thinking how we can do it and combine together to do that. And then in doing that, we will get the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, so I'll leave it here and see if there are any questions or comments. Yes, Prabhu.
Take the book and hold.
Okay.
Krishna himself, right?
Sure, sure. Yeah, yeah. That's, I've seen, you know, I give the book to people on the street, and not sometimes they have something in their hand and they want to pay. So take out their wallet, they put the book on the floor, on the ground, you know, on the street. And there's Prabhupada on the street, or, you know, Krishna on the street, you know, facing down. Yeah, that's a risk we are taking. That's correct. You know, we devotees, we take that risk of them disrespecting the pure devotee and the Supreme Lord. So the higher principle is they get the association. That's the higher principle. But higher principle is by association with the book they'll get purified. So then we take a little bit of risk in doing that. And we have seen that it works. People who have taken the book, though they have disrespected it, but when they have read it, they've got the benefit. And some have even become devotees. And by the very fact of them buying the book, they are developing piety. So though they don't have piety, but the very fact they are paying some money for that book, they are creating piety for themselves and by association with devotees. So, you know, they have to start somewhere. And Srila Prabhupada even said that someone who, what did he say, if they read his books, they get a human birth. Okay. Read the books or touch the book? Even touch the book, what to speak of reading it. So we are creating piety for them. Because what we can't see is that when we give someone a book, because after many, many lifetimes, you know, of rotating in the material world, they're coming in touch with the Supreme Lord and His devotees. And that is a very significant event in their life. You know, to us it looks very just another ordinary moment. But in the sojourn of the jiva, it's a very significant moment. They're coming in touch with the Supreme Lord after, you know, millions and millions of lifetimes. So just by the fact of associating with the devotee on the street and touching the book, or maybe even buying the book, their karma is altered. This we can't see in the background. So in other words, their piety is being created by accepting the book. And though they might disrespect it, it is true. But the higher principle is they get more benefit. And Krishna is merciful. I mean, for those people who feel they're going to be very offensive, then we should not give them the book. Like, you know, one time I was distributing a book and this person said, okay, I'll take this book and I'll use it as toilet paper. So I didn't give him the book because I know he's going to do it. And he was quite offensive. So to save them more offenses, better not give them. But, you know, most people, they just don't know. Even they come to a preaching center and they put the book on the floor, but in their heart they really want to learn more and they want to progress. So they don't know the proper etiquette, and that they can be taught. But someone who's outright offensive, an asura, a demoniac person, asuram bhava mashrita, we should not give them. And those people we should avoid, because they will commit further offenses. Yeah, that happens sometimes. That happens. And that's a risk we are taking. I've heard Aniruddha Prabhu mention many times in the 80s when they used to do Harinam. And that time they used to give out the books for free. You know, devotees would be collecting money and then they would give the books out for free. And then and some of the books would end up in the bin because they were distributed on such a large scale on Harinam. Then there was the duty of one devotee to go around all the bins and take the books out of there. So yeah, that happens sometimes. And there are stories also of people who found books in the bin and they become a devotee. There's that aspect as well. I can't think of any particular story, but there are many. If you go on iskonbookdistribution.com, you'll find that someone, you know, people are just looking in the bin for something, and then, yeah, you know any story?
My friend from high school found, he was working at the place where all the recycling rubbish gets sorted, on the conveyor belt, he found a shrimp up by the time one work.
On the conveyor belt, you know, all places. There you go. One person told me yesterday, they bought a book from eBay. I was surprised. The book bought a Science of Self-Realization from eBay for $11 delivered. The hard version. Oh, that's a pretty good deal. So, yeah. They end up, you know, places and people pick them up. And some might get destroyed also in the bin. That's unfortunate, but, you know, what can be done? You know, we have to... That's the risk we are taking. Yeah.
I think in that period, though, they made the most belongings that Australia's ever made in that period where they collected all the luxury, bought all the books, and then freely distributed. That's what I hear from other senior devotees.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially from Hari Swari, I've heard that from Hari Swari himself. But in that period, they made more devotees than Australia's ever made when they freely distributed those free books.
And there you go. So that's the, you know, that's the positive out of it. We were doing Harinam last year. They covered all of southeast metropolitan Melbourne, and north metropolitan Melbourne. And we distributed books for free. And, you know, some might have ended up in the bin. But most people took them, from what I saw. And we don't know. We'll see who becomes a devotee. We have put the seeds out there. So let's see.
Yeah. Just a question I have in regards to working before. I mean, if you do not have the desire to you don't have the desire to enjoy these passion and material facilities, then what's the point of even working? I mean, things come fairly easy, especially in a fashion country like Australia. You know, there's not a great, you know, need to kind of work hard, but we hear this dogma, you know, from the government, because they're in the mode of passion, right? They're all, you know, this middle earth, you know, it's all predominantly influenced by this mode of passion. Work hard, you know, you can succeed, you know. You can become financially free and independent, and this whole dogma, you know, that they keep pushing on the citizens, you know. And I constantly get it, you know. Are you working, you know? You should be working.
So what's the question?
Well, the question is, what is the point of engaging in these, in working so hard? Like you said before, what is the point of working so hard, you know? I just don't see the point.
I was saying that for, you know, non-devotees as a point. Point I was making was to get some pleasure, one has to undergo so much misery. But, you know, living in this world, if one, especially a householder, you need money, you know. So to get money, one has to work. And then that work, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, he says, sacrifice, penance, and charity should not be given up. And they indeed purify even the great souls. So any activities or any sacrifices which lead to the advancement of spiritual life, one's advancement in Krishna consciousness, those activities should not be given up. So in other words, like for devotees, doing a job, if they have a family and, you know, they're living outside the temple, then in order to survive, you need some sort of occupation. And of course, a devotee tries to keep it as simple as possible. But still, one has to work. And whatever our employer tells us, we have to do. But that activity then becomes spiritual when the results are employed in Krishna service. Right? So then such activities should not be given up. Because they are supporting one's Krishna consciousness.
So the question I had is, if you do not desire to enjoy family life, you do not
well, most people desire to. That's why they enter into it. But most people do, you know. That's why we're in the material world. Very few people might not, you know. But even most devotees do. Why do we enter family life? Because we want to enjoy. Taking myself an example, and so we want to enjoy family life, that's why we are in it, and then we have to pay the price. We have to, you know, support the family and take, the main point is, if we want to enjoy family life, then we have to take responsibility. That's what Prabhupada always said. And you have to take, if you want a family, you want children, you want wife, you want facilities, then you have to take responsibility. And for that, you have to work. But that work should not be given up because it leads to Krishna, it's just supporting our Krishna consciousness. But for those who don't desire, they can join the Brahmacharya ashram. And then life is very simple. You don't have to work. Then just do service 24/7. Then your life is 24/7 selfless service. Then that's the other option. Then you have to become fully selfless and do devotional service for the pleasure of Guru and Gauranga. And then all your necessities are taken care of. And then it's a simple life. So those options are there for those who want it. Yes, Prabhu.
Prabhuji, in line with what Prabhu said just now, book distribution, fences and all that. I was told Prabhupada, when he started the Rati Yatra, big time Rati Yatra in America, prasadam was being distributed, you know, just like that. And some fell on the floor, of course, and all that. Prabhupada was also questioned, how can prasadam be just thrown like that?
Mm. Times are different. The social condition has changed, you know. And, well, even if we are working, the point is devotees are still depending upon Krishna. That's the main point. So, when one goes to work, you know, one should not think that I'm maintaining myself by, you know, my endeavor, and I'm doing this job by my endeavor, and so many money is coming and my abilities, etc., etc. But one is dependent on the Supreme Lord, and one sees one's income and job as the mercy of the Lord, that the Lord is maintaining us like this. That's how the devotee sees it. So one can even directly depend on Krishna in that way by going to work. I don't think we can live like Kola Vecha Sridhar, or you know, just whatever comes. He was also doing a job, and he was giving whatever little was getting, was giving 50%. Most devotees can't do that. Yeah. These days is not necessarily true. I've seen cases where the woman is the, you know, bread earner. The man is jobless, and the woman as the wife is the role of maintainer. So you know, these days it's all topsy turvy. It's not necessarily true. And these days most people, they need two incomes to survive, isn't it? The husband and wife both have to work. That's the way things are these days. Especially if you have a family, then both man and woman have to work to some degree to support themselves. So, yeah, in a traditional sense, that's true. but in the modern context, not necessarily. But we know that Krishna is our maintainer, that's the main point. And that's one of the aspects of surrender, to take Krishna as a maintainer. Yeah.
Prabhupada says that the Brahmana, his main occupational duty is study of the Shastra, penance and austerity. So it seems difficult for the Kali Yuga Brahmana to stay aloof from the association with the Vaishyas, because if he enters the society and works with the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas, he becomes influenced. Just like Dronacharya, he couldn't afford to maintain his family, so he had to go to Hastinapur and engage in occupation with the Kuras, and he accepted the sinful grain. It's actually why he became implicated in that way. So how does a Brahmana in, you know, the modern context, how does he somehow or another still maintain his purity in Krishna consciousness and still work with this materialistic, with the Kamis, with the, you know, the Vaishnavas?
Sure.
I mean, it's just completely opposite, you know, to what, you know, the sanctity of a Brahmana in his activities.
Yeah, sure. Well, before there was the Varnashram was in full swing. So these days, there's no Varnashram. So people were engaged according to their varna, because society was arranged in such a way. And as Bhanu Swami was mentioning, because to have Varnashram means you need to have a monarch, you know, you need to have a strong Kshatriya. So that's not there. We cannot have Varnashram. So we just have to work with what we have. And well, the main point is, yeah, devotees with Brahmanical propensity, they also have to work outside. But if we maintain the association of devotees in a temple, you know, in a temple there's so many facilities to, so they can engage their Brahmanical propensities by deity worship, by performing yajñas, by you know, by teaching the shastra, by studying. So the main point is to have that association of devotees. So to live in a spiritual community, then all those, one can maintain one's Krishna consciousness. And Srila Prabhupada even said to establish Varnashram, meaning that taking the elements which will support our bhakti, and in a, especially in a rural setting. So there, you can see devotees can be engaged according to their propensity. Those who are of Brahmanical nature, they can be engaged as teachers, you know, pujaris, doing yajñas, etc., etc. Their main role is education in the Brahmanas. But the main thing is to be Krishna conscious. That's the main. That's in Kali Yuga. That's the main, to be a devotee. Okay. Any last question? Shrimad Bhagavatam ki, Shri Prabhupada.